Well, thank you all for being here today. So I'm going to be talking about the process of conducting a nutrition labeling intervention. As was indicated, I'm a principal investigator on a worksite obesity prevention program in which there were several components, just one of which was nutrition labeling of all of the foods in the worksite cafeteria. And in the process of doing that, we came across kind of a number of barriers, challenges, and I really couldn't find any information out there about how to do this kind of research, which is what prompted me to give this presentation today. So just by a show of hands in the audience, how many of you have ever conducted some kind of nutrition labeling intervention? A few. How many of you are thinking about it at some point, would consider doing that kind of work? Okay. And for the rest of you, maybe you'll just get a better sense of what's involved in this kind of research as you read about it. So I'm going to start by telling you very briefly about our overall study, the GO program, and then get into some of the recommendations we have if you're going to do this kind of work. I have no relationships to disclose. So the GO program is a worksite obesity prevention pilot program. It's a quasi-experimental design being conducted at St. Luke's Hospital in Duluth, Minnesota. There are about 2,000 employees, 530 of those agreed to participate in our project. Of those, about 100 are our comparison sample who are working at satellite clinics who are not exposed, hopefully, to most of the components of the intervention. It's a 12-month intervention. There are four main components, the first of which is comprehensive menu labeling on all of the foods in the hospital cafeteria, and I'll be talking about that, as well as some other environmental changes in the cafeteria, such as cutting portion sizes, rearranging the cafeteria. We gave out high-quality pedometers to all of our participants to increase their activity level. We were also really interested in changing the social norms at the hospital, and so we incorporated 50 employees who were identified as not just being health-oriented, but also very well-connected and influential among their colleagues. And we did training with them about how to change the norm, making it cool to wear your pedometer or eat green foods, and uncool to bring in snacks into the break rooms to share with colleagues. We also had a message campaign, kind of the expected. We had a lot of information in those messages, but we were also targeting social norms. So here are examples of our posters around the hospital. We had big banners in the cafeteria giving some messages or trying to say what we were doing. We gave out magnets with energy balance facts, table toppers, which we had in the worksite cafeteria, as well as the break rooms, and we switched those out every month or two. A website, stair use posters, prompting people to use the stairs rather than the elevator. And so in terms of measurement, all the typical measurements were tracking people's BMI, waist circumference, questionnaires, stair use. But the piece that's most relevant to the talk today is we're looking at food purchasing data. So we'll be doing that in the aggregate, so looking at is implementing these labels in the cafeteria, is that really changing people's purchasing behavior? And we can look at all employees as a whole, but also individually, whether or not we're making a difference. So at St. Luke's Hospital, as well as probably this is the case in most hospitals and many work sites, employees can use their ID badge to use as like a debit card. So when they make their purchase, they swipe it, and their purchase comes off out of their paycheck. Well, we can track each one of those individual purchases and know whether they bought the cheeseburger or the grilled chicken sandwich. So that's really kind of a key way that we're going to be looking at whether or not our intervention is effective. And we're actually in final data collection that started about 2 hours ago. And so I don't really have much data to present, but I'll be more talking about how we do this research. So if you've been at any of the talks these last few days about nutrition labeling effectiveness, you know that there's a lot we don't know. You know, people say one thing, but do they really make changes based on calorie labeling or any kind of nutrition labeling? And we really don't know. So I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about that, but just to say that there are very few well-designed studies in applied settings such as work sites, and particularly very few studies that label all of the foods in the cafeteria. The research done to date suggests that maybe there are modest positive changes on people's food selections, but again, we really don't know that, and we don't know who this works for. So there's a lot of research really needs to be done. So what I've created is a top 10, the lessons. There's many more than that, but and which I am happy to talk with any of you about if you're thinking about embarking on this work. So here are the top 10 lessons. Number 10, assemble your crew carefully. It goes without saying you want an interdisciplinary team. So we had health education, nutrition, psychology, health economics, but a couple of disciplines you might not have considered being on your team that I would encourage you to think about include experts in health communication. They were really key in translating our ideas into very effective messages and creating the whole brand. I didn't even know what branding was coming from a psychology perspective. And also having a graphic designer on the team in-house rather than farming that out someplace else. We did not realize how much would be involved in just creating labels that looked attractive and were consistent with our overall brand and theme. And so having somebody on the team that could produce these quickly was really important. Number 9, getting everybody on board. Again, this kind of goes without saying that you need to get all the stakeholders involved, but we were continually surprised by the number of different players. We know that labels are controversial. People worry about the cost of implementing them, that they'll lose revenue because people won't want to buy those foods. But a couple of selling points you can make if you're trying to sell this program is, to date, there's really no data to support lost revenue. And in fact, as we learned yesterday at one of the talks, some of the restaurants are actually seeing increased revenue by providing the calories information or other nutrition information. And also, of course, emphasizing the possible return on investment for providing or for reducing obesity in terms of reduced healthcare costs. No, the stakeholders, again, there are so many different stakeholders. We were in the hospital for 2 years doing formative work, and still throughout this last year have been surprised by the number of different people who had some stake in what we were doing, from marketing, HR. The dietitians that worked within the hospital had a lot to say, and so we tried to have a lot of dialogues. The other service that you really need to think about is who runs the food service in your worksite. Is it run and owned and operated by the organization, which is the case for us in the hospital? It was run by the hospital and managed by them. But in some cases, an outside company like Sodexo will come in and they supply the food, manage it, and you have very different pros and cons for each of those. So think about know where that food is coming from and how you're going to be able to work with those suppliers or managers. Number 7, determine your destination. So again, this should be really clear, but we were surprised how frequently we had to keep coming back to the question, what is it we are trying to achieve? And trying to make that pretty simple. For us, we were not doing an employee wellness program. We were doing a pilot research study on trying to prevent obesity. So we really wanted to focus on an energy balance message, calories in, calories out. So we struggled with how much information to provide on that nutrition label. And so we decided to keep it very simple, and we wanted to use the traffic light labels. But then the question became, what's red? What's yellow? What's green? How are we going to figure out what is in each of those categories? And we've actually spent months trying to figure out exactly how to categorize this. This was not as simple as you would think it would be. But we kept returning to our energy balance concept and decided to use energy density, which is the number of calories in a specific weight of food. So foods that are pack a lot of calories into a very small amount, such as nuts or salad dressing, has high energy density associated with greater weight gain. Foods that are low in energy density are those that have very few calories for lots of bulk and weight, like fruits and vegetables. So that's how we labeled all of our foods. But in addition to that, we wanted to provide some other information about energy balance, including calories, and we wanted to tie that to the pedometer use, so the number of steps that people were taking. And we know from the research that a lot of this has just been done in the last year, 2, 3, 4 years, about what kind of labels are the most effective. People make food decisions in about 4 to 10 seconds. People say that they look at nutrition fact labels. But eye tracking data, observational data suggest they don't. Very few people are doing that. In fact, in most of these interventions with labels, most people aren't even aware of the fact that the calorie information or whatever nutrition information is even there. So it's really important to make that those labels attention grabbing and directive. People say they don't want directive messages, but directive meaning eat this, not that, a check mark, a green light, a red light, actually seems to have the biggest impact on people making healthier choices. So our labels, what we ended up doing, making them very simple, we had a color, the calories, and the number of steps. And what we heard anecdotally was those steps were what got people the most. People would say, oh, if I want that blueberry muffin, 500 calories, that's 10,000 steps. That's 5 miles. And we tried to do a lot of training about what was a step equivalent. So do I really want to walk 5 miles in order to burn off that muffin? Maybe not. We also tried to make it very salient to the employee, so they couldn't grab that muffin without looking at our label first. So there, 97%, I think, of the employees said that they were aware of the GO program, which is good. And here's another example in our grill line. They really couldn't take their food without seeing our labels. All of the labels had to be fit to the space that we had, which was also just another one of those challenges. We had labels on all of the vending machines as well. Number 6, allow for extra time. We had hundreds of recipes, thousands of foods that we needed to calculate the nutritionals for. And that meant going into the cafeteria or into the kitchen and actually working with the cooks. We had research assistants, I can't say that I was there, at 6 a.m. working with the bakers saying, how much butter do you use in that pan? Do you use 2% milk or skim milk with all of our recipes or a lot of our recipes? And that took a lot of time, many, many months to develop this database. And in fact, it's up until a week ago, we were adding to this. There are constantly new foods. And the other piece that we were kind of surprised about was determining the portion size. So we would have these recipes that would say, okay, macaroni and cheese makes 30, this recipe makes 30 portions. But then we went to the servers and they weren't getting 30 portions out of that recipe. They might have been getting 15. And so what we ended up doing was we were in the hospital cafeteria pretty much every day. We weighed the foods. We'd have the servers, we'd say, give us a portion. What do you normally serve? And we get that. We do that at least 3 times for every food and even go back different days with different servers and figure out what are they really serving. And sometimes that was 2 or 3 times the number that was on the recipe, which meant we had to go back and revise our label to fit the cap because we wanted the calories to represent what the person was actually getting. So that was really key, and we realized we just had to be there. Number 5, adapt to the conditions. Adapting was just a key throughout this whole study. We had new food items coming in every day. In fact, this picture is of our first day of our intervention. We had, as you can see, all our labels out, except actually half of the foods in the salad line didn't have labels. We got there the first day. We didn't have labels for those. Those were all new salads that had been purchased in the week or two prior to us making the labels. So we realized we had to figure out a better system for tracking new foods that they might put out so we'd have a label ready to go, or just accept that we were not going to capture every food every day and we would just have to do our best and do as much as we could. Menu changes, there was a menu cycle. We tried to prepare for that, but they made changes depending on what food came in or if they had leftovers from the day before. So we were constantly adapting to that. The cooks could choose new foods and make up new foods, which was great. Great for the employees, great for the cooks who had that freedom, not so good for study standardization. There was lack of standardization in how foods were served, how much were served, as well as how they were prepared, and we just tried to do our best with that. There was failed equipment at one point in the middle of the study. The fryer broke, and they started baking instead of frying. Great. That was really great, but not so great for our labels and having to kind of readjust. There might be system reorganization that affects this kind of intervention, so In our case, the hospital, in the middle of the study, moved to a patient room service model. So they totally redid their kitchen, and in the process of this transition, cut back on a lot of the foods that were offered in the cafeteria, changed the kind of foods, went to more convenience foods. And so this picture is showing there was less food. We had labels out and no food. So just you got to expect that these unexpecteds are going to happen. Number four, check your gauges. So we knew that we were going to be checking our intervention, seeing that labels were out. We thought we would start by doing this daily and then move to, you know, once or twice a week as the employees at the hospital started implementing the intervention. And what we learned is that we had to be there every day, Monday through Friday, doing it ourselves and checking and putting labels out if we really wanted the intervention to be enacted. So that's something we really hadn't anticipated, and fortunately, over the course of the study, we had over 20 research assistants who were helping us and who were there every day. Number three, get in the pit. You really have to be in that cafeteria with the cooks, working with the cashiers, know how that food is made and prepared. And we'd established, or our research assistants established, relationships with all of those people. They knew the cooks by name, they knew the servers, they knew the cashier, so that they could work very closely with them and help train them or nudge them or whatever else they might need to do. Number two, knowing when you've arrived, really getting at your data. So what can you actually measure? If we're doing a study like this, we have to be able to measure what people are purchasing. And in some cases, that was really easy. The burger versus the grilled chicken sandwich, there was a keyboard or a register button for both of those. But many of the foods at St. Luke's Hospital were sold in bulk, such as a salad bar. How do you measure if people are buying this kind of salad, full of fat and calories, versus this kind of salad? And we spent a long time trying to problem solve how we could do that. And in the end, we determined that we were really never going to be able to effectively do that and just kind of had to let that go in terms of the bulk purchases. And we'll have to look at other types of purchases. In a future study, maybe we would try to tackle that. But it's challenging. This is a screenshot of the cash register. And so you can see each of these buttons is a different food. And again, there's limited number of buttons. And so we will never know, so in the case of bread, we'll never know if somebody purchased light bread for 50 calories or the 120-calorie regular bread or sausage pizza that was 200 calories more than the cheese pizza. And so we could have another button, but there are limited numbers. So you have to pick which of those foods you really want to get the data on. And the other key piece was who owns the data. We were kind of surprised by this. So even though the service, the cafeteria service, was run by the hospital, they contracted out the cash register and service and the software, and that company said, no, we own that data. So we were trying to figure out how are we going to extract this data so we can use it and track individual purchases. And at first the company said, no, we're not going to give you that data. Fortunately, the hospital was on our side and advocated and said, no, that is our data. And we found an agreement so that we could capture that data. But something really important that you might not think about is, can you actually get meaningful data that you can use? And if there's any way to get that individual data, that's going to give you much richer information about who the intervention works for and who it doesn't work for. So important. Number two, create a map. So consider sustainability. You're going to leave at some point if you're doing a research study. And will the company take ownership for this? And can you build that ownership over time and have it be a project at the company rather than the researchers' project? And we were really excited. Very recently, we had some materials that didn't have the hospital logo on it. And somebody from marketing said, why did you take our logo, the St. Luke's logo, off your materials? And I looked back at our communications, and she had explicitly said at the start of the study, no, that's not St. Luke's study. That's your study. We don't want our logo associated with your study. So that was really exciting that by the end of the study, they're seeing it as their program rather than our program. So if you can make that happen, great. Number one, I've already said it, but I think the most important lesson is adapt, adapt, adapt. Know that things are constantly changing, and you just have to go with it. So I just want to thank, we had, as I said, over 20, maybe 25 research assistants. I've named a few of those, and thanks to the Healthy Food, Healthy Lives grant that funded this project. Any questions? Do we have time for questions? Great. We weren't. We tried. We only needed one person there every day for about a half hour, and that was enough. And we're actually working with the hospital right now on that transition plan, and they're kind of saying, we don't have the personnel for this. And so we've got some other interns that are trying to do that, but we're really working on that, and that is a struggle. And I think the key is finding an employee or two or three employees who love the program, who say, this is important. And we had that at one point early in the study, and then with the room service change, she got removed and moved somewhere else. And since then, we haven't had that consistency. And so it's been really hard because, I mean, these are people who often don't really care about our mission, and we're asking them to do something. So we did a lot of, you know, this is really important. You're key to this. What are your thoughts? How can we better implement this? And trying to give them some ownership over it and say that we valued their input, which we did. But even then, it was a challenge, and I think that's going to be a struggle for the organization. And this was a small cafeteria serving, you know, much fewer than probably you're dealing with. Yes. Well, our grant is a 2-year grant for $100,000, and I would say we did it within that budget. But what that meant, we had 7 PIs, and we were doing, and no graduate students, and we were doing the work with our undergraduates. But it was a lot of work, and I would recommend more money and more graduate students. We sometime in the spring, so we'll be analyzing, entering our data. We're still going to be running some focus groups. It's going to take us some time to get that sales data piece. I'm thinking we'll know the weight and the BMI waist circumference data within a few months. I suspect the sales data, it's going to be several months before we get that. You can come talk to me. Hopefully we'll be publishing the results or presenting on the results. But I'm happy to share those with you, and we can talk later.